Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Crash Analysis, Diagnostics of IBM SDKs, version 1.5 and version 1.6 for WebSphere Application Server. Today's presenters are Jerry Babu, Param Kushem, AJ Belodia, and Daniel Julin. Jerry and AJ are IBM certified WebSphere system administrators and working in technical customer service area supporting WebSphere application server for over 6 years. Both have in-depth knowledge in using WebSphere application server, but specialize in SDK performance tuning and admin-related tasks. Daniel has 20 years of experience developing and troubleshooting complex online systems. As technical area lead for the WebSphere serviceability team, he currently focuses on helping the team define and implement a collection of tools and techniques to assist in problem determination for WebSphere application server and to maximize the efficiency of IBM support. He also occasionally assists directly in various critical customer support situations. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Jerry, AJ, and Daniel.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the presentation on crash diagnostics for IBM SDKs for WebSphere application server. We are on slide 2 at the moment. The agenda for today's talk is divided into two parts. In part 1, we'll define what is a crash and discuss different crash symptoms. We'll talk about the importance of setting up the system correctly so we can capture the complete documentation in the event of a crash. Next, we talk about how to prevent a crash in the first place by taking some common preventive steps. Next, we'll also talk about how to perform initial triage on your own by reviewing the Java course. Part 2 of the presentation, we'll discuss TTFJ technology in general and how to use dump analyzer tool to process the code so we get additional information from the code file. Moving on to slide 3. What is a crash? Ideally speaking, any program should throw an exception and give the user an ability to take action before terminating abnormally. However, in reality, processes do terminate unexpectedly due to software-related reasons. In Java, most of these crashes occur while executing native code such as C in any of the following components: JVM internal code, example GC, that is garbage collection routine, or JVM JIT code, just-in-time compiler. Or it could be application JNI code as well. We'll expand more on this in the coming slides. But before we proceed further, I would like to make a distinction between a hang and a crash, as we often see customers get confused with this terminology. Based on whether it is a hang or a crash, our approach to problem determination and documentation collected will also differ. You generally see a crash either as an unrecoverable exception thrown by Java notifying you of a general protection fault, that is GPF. Crashes can occur because of a fault in the JRE or because of a fault in the native code being run in the Java process. Some of the most common causes are segmentation violation due to bad or corrupt memory address, stack overflow due to recursive calls, either in application code or JVM, such as JIT code. If it is a native stack overflow, our experience tells that it is more likely from the JVM JIT code. And we are still on slide 3 at the moment. Another scenario that could cause a crash is out of memory, especially in the native heap. This is not that common though, but if you see messages like malloc failed or unable to allocate print buffer in the logs, chances are you are running into native memory issues. So these are the things to keep in mind when debugging crash issues. Moving on to slide 4, fault in JVM. In the previous slide, we looked at possible causes for a crash. Here, we'll focus on crashes due to a fault in JVM component like GC and JIT. We'll also look at some of the crashes due to fault in the JNI code. Let's take a look at GC first. The purpose of GC is to allocate and free up memory when objects are no longer in use. While doing so, memory could get corrupted and result in a crash. JIT is another JVM component. The purpose of JIT is to compile Java bytecodes into native code for performance improvements. There are two different kinds of crashes that could occur within the JIT component itself. First, the crash can occur while compiling Java bytecodes into native code. And the second one, while executing the native code itself, that may have been generated incorrectly, which could result in a crash. The other common failure we see is in JNI, Java Native Interface. JNI allows Java code to interact with native code like C using JNI APIs. Some of the most common cases where JNI is used is JDBC Type 2 drivers, for example, DB2 Type 2 driver or Oracle. MQ libraries shipped with the WebSphere is another example. WebSphere as such has very little JNI code, mainly to implement system management functions. Moving on to slide 5. We are just given a flow of events and a sequence of steps you will want to start out with. First thing to check is whether there is a Java code or a core generated due to a result of a crash. If you cannot find a core or Java core, then make sure the system is set up correctly so we get a good set of documentation next time. We'll go through each of this in more details in the next few slides. Let's say we got a Java core. We'll go through the sequence and rule out each one of them. The first thing to check is if there is a stack overflow. Then identify whether it's a Java stack or native stack by looking at either the current thread or one of the runnable threads in the Java core. If you don't see any symptoms of a stack overflow, second thing to check is to look for JIT failures. If it is crashing during compiling a Java bytecode, or while executing the JIT or compile code. If you are able to identify the class or method, then a suitable workaround could be to skip that class or method and engage IBM support to work further on getting a fix. If you don't see any JIT symptoms, next thing to check for is JNI. If the crash is in JNI code, identify the native code being used and then run with xcheckJNI, which is a JVM argument, which will enable additional checks to find JNI errors. We'll go over in more details in the next few slides. And looking at the chart, the boxes in the gray indicate symptoms and the appropriate actions to take, and the boxes in yellow indicate the next steps that need to be taken to resolve the issue. Moving on to slide 6. Prevention. The key to preventing a crash is to always to be at the latest level of code. We do understand that it's not always possible to upgrade production environment frequently, but it is a good practice to stay close to the latest levels so you don't run into any known issues that are already fixed. As you might have experienced, that debugging a production issue is stressful and causes significant downtime. This is even more frustrating if the issue is already addressed and a fix is readily available. So having regular scheduled maintenance is not only cost-effective but also provides a stable production environment. Some of the things to look out for are JVM service refresh levels, to make sure you're on the latest and greatest. latest OS patches, especially for Linux and Solaris. Another thing to look out for is latest JDBC Type 2 drivers. The above link for WebSphere support site provides one central site for all versions of WebSphere and JVM where you can get the version details and the current JDK levels available. Moving on to slide 7. Minimum data required for crash analysis. So in the first few slides, we talked about common causes of a crash and gave a big picture of the flow of events. We will now focus on the must-gather part. We'll start out with the common data that is required to debug a crash on any operating system. As a user, the most important piece of information is the Java code to do the initial problem determination. Before going further, I would like to highlight some of the differences in terminology between the IBM platform versus Sun HP. By IBM platform, I mean it covers AIX, Linux, and Windows. For example, Java codes on IBM platforms is similar to thread dumps on Sun and HP. The only difference being thread dumps are written to native standard out.log, whereas Java codes are written to a separate file, their own file. Another thing to keep in mind, all JVM information for IBM platforms get written to native_standard_error.log. For Sun and HP, it gets written to native_standard_out.log. For example, verbose GC output, G traces, etc. Moving on to slide 8. OS-specific data, which is nice to have but not absolutely required. In addition to the common data that we discussed in previous slides, here is OS-specific data which is required for crash. This is required since most crashes occur in native code while interacting with the OS system libraries. For AIX, processing the code using DBX, which is an OS debugging tool, helps extract native stacks from the core. This is especially useful in OneFi since we are not getting native stacks as part of the Java core. It's always good to check if DBX is installed on the OS since DBX is not part of the default install. We do hear back from customers having problems trying to process the code because DBX is not installed on the box. Getlist is a script supplied as part of our must-gather that should be run against the core and is useful for earlier versions of Java. Moving on to Linux. GDP is very similar to the one DBX on AIX. Again, this is OS provided tool to process the core to extract the native stacks. LibScrabber is similar to the getlibs on AIX, which is part of our must-gather to process the core. With the help of LibScrabber output, we'll be able to process the core on a remote machine. Moving on to slide 9, OS-specific data continues. For Windows, there is no OS-specific tool to get native stack information, so we'll have to rely on just the core file. However, there is a Windows-specific file called Dr. Watson log, very similar to ERPT on AIX, which basically provides information errors on system events and clues on some abnormal termination of a process. For Solaris and HP, I'll just briefly highlight the information that we need in the event of a crash debugging. HS_error_pit is the most important file to debug the crash. It contains information about the failing module, failing thread, native libraries, loaded JVM arguments, details of the heap usage at the time of the crash. PStack is a SunOS-specific tool similar to DBX on AIX. This tool is used to process the core to get the native stack information. For HP, you have GDB to get the same information and use packcore command to process the core. That is part of GDB, very similar to JExtract. So the core can be processed in a remote system. Moving on to slide 10. Setting up your system to collect diagnostic data for a crash. I would like to take a moment to stress the importance of setting up your system so we get a complete set of must-gather data from a crash. Here is a nice checklist for WebSphere admins to be more proactive rather than reacting to a crash in a production environment. Complex issues may require multiple iterations to gather data for debugging a crash. Being proactive can significantly reduce the time to resolution and prevent unnecessary outages just to gather the data. It's always good to go through the must-gather steps in advance, maybe in a test environment, so you're prepared and know what to expect when a crash occurs in production environment. Some of the common mistakes we see are we get a core and an app server logs from a different process, especially if you have multiple app servers running on the box in a cluster environment, so we may not be able to correlate the information. We do understand the complexity of collecting the data, so we have tried to automate this using ISA-like tool. This is a pilot and still work in progress, and enhancements are continually being made for many problems besides crash. Depending on your OS, you can refer to the above tech notes to ensure that the system is set up correctly. Moving on to slide 11. Understanding the Java core. So here we'll take a look at the real Java core and go through the important sections of the Java core and what they mean. The first section, title subcomponent dump routine, describes the time of the crash and what caused the crash. Please note, the time is in GMT, and in most crashes, you would see GPF being the dump event. For a manually triggered Java core, say from a kill minus 3, the dump event will be user. And for a Java core from a out of memory condition, it will be out of memory. In the GPF subcomponent section, the OS level is listed, the signal that caused the crash, the VM flags, and the module that's running at the time of the crash. Here it is J9JIT23.dll, indicating the crash occurred during a GC. For example, the VM flag 005 indicates what's the corresponding VM crash, which is typically JIT. The environment subcomponent section provides you the Java version you're running, heap arguments, GC policy, etc. The memory subcomponent dump routine provides the heap usage at the time of the crash, GC history, which is more useful to debug memory issues. If you notice, GC history is a new feature that's added to 1.5 Java course, which provides information about the last few cycles even without verbose GC being enabled. So this will be very handy for troubleshooting out-of-memory problems. Moving on to slide 12. Understanding Java code output continues. The log section provides monitor information, which is useful for troubleshooting hang problems, so I'm not going to discuss more on that. The thread component section provides Java stacks for all the threads and their state, whether it's running, conditional wait, monitor wait, etc. From a crash perspective, we'll be more interested in the current thread because that's the thread that's getting executed at the time of the crash. We'll go over some specific examples in the coming slides. The classes section lists the class load information and all the classes that are loaded into the JVM. And finally, if you see the Java dump end section at the bottom of the Java core, it indicates it's a full Java core. Moving on to slide 13. Sample Java core from a cheat failure. We just looked at the various sections of the Java course and what kind of information provides. Here is a specific example from a JIT failure. As we mentioned earlier, there are two kinds of JIT failure. JVM crash in the JIT internal code while compiling the bytecode to native code. Another one is JVM crash while executing the JIT code because of the invalid bytecode. The first example above is from a crash while compiling the bytecode. It lists the method that is getting compiled at the time of the crash, which is com/example/nmas/services/dto/eob.hashcode. The GPF info subcomponent lists the module, which is J9JIT23.dll. That's the module that's been executing at the time of the crash. And the current thread details indicates that the JIT compilation thread has been running. In the second example, JIT crash while executing compile code. The GPF info section indicates the method that was executed at the time of the crash. And the current thread provides the details of the thread that's executing at that time. In most cases, the effective workaround would be to skip the failing method and engage IBM support to get an official fix. Moving on to slide 14. Here's an example from a GC crash. In the native standard error.log, the module name listed is J9GC23.dll, which was running at the time of the crash. The dump event GPF indicates it's a crash. Looking at the current thread in the Java core confirms that the crash occurred during GC operation. At this point, you may want to engage IBM support. We may request additional GC traces to debug further. Moving on to slide 15. Sample Java code from JNI failure. Here is a sample Java code from a JNI failure. Just like GC crash, sometimes you would see the module name and dump event in the native logs. Errors in JNI code can occur in several ways. The most common being program crashes during execution of a native method, or sometimes JNI code causes deadlocks shortly after returning from a native method. On rare occasions, the program may crash after returning from the native method, often during GC. If you think that you have a problem with the interaction between user-written native code and the JVM, you can run diagnostics that help you check the JNI transitions. To invoke these diagnostics, you can specify -x check:JNI option in the generic JVM argument section. This option activates a set of wrapper functions around the JNI calls. The wrapper functions perform checks on the incoming parameters, and the output is returned to the native logs. Moving on to slide 16. Sample Java code from a native Stack Overflow. Here is another example from a native Stack Overflow. Typically, there are two kinds of Stack Overflows: Java Stack and Native Stack Overflow. Generally, Native Stack Overflows would result in a crash. In some cases, it's listed in the native logs, as shown above. The current thread in the Java code would show that certain lines in the Java Stack would repeat itself, indicating it's a recursive call. You can explicitly set the native stack size using parameter -xmso. This might help in some cases, but not always. If it's a Java Stack Overflow, typically the JVM would not crash, but it could be any of the runnable threads, and the top of the stack would be handling an exception. Moving on to slide 17. To ensure the best results, I would suggest that you try to stay current or closer to the latest versions of the SDK. This also applies to debug tools as well, so we don't rediscover issues that are already fixed. Also, ensure the system is set up correctly to collect the complete crash must gather data before engaging support. Moving on to slide 18. Part two of the presentation, dump analyzer tool. So far in part one, we covered about the crash symptoms, how to set up the system, and reviewed Java code for each of these symptoms. But there are cases where a Java code may not be produced, or in some cases, IBM support team will have to perform additional debugging that would require a system core. Using a system core, we can extract some information, same information as in the Java core, and even much more. The core file is a binary file, and it depends on system libraries for it to be processed on a remote machine. IBM has developed the DTFJ framework to address this issue. Dump analyzer tool is used to process the core. This tool is developed using DTFJ API. Moving on to slide 19, dump analyzer tool architecture. Dump analyzer has two pieces to it. A low-level library that reads low-level information that is shipped with a JVM, and an extensive list of libraries or modules for doing different analysis depending upon what problem you want to debug. Here is a pictorial view of the previous slide. The chart is divided into two sections. The section on the left needs to be done on the same machine, usually by the customer as part of the must gather. This includes running JExtract to create platform independent file. The JExtracted output is then used by the dump analyzer as shown on the right. This part can be run on a remote system. Moving on to slide 20. How to process system dumps using JExtract. Here we'll see how to create a platform independent core file using JExtract. What exactly is JExtract? JExtract is part of SDK to process the system core file to capture system dependent libraries so the output can be analyzed on a remote machine. Where is JExtract? JExtract is found under WAS underscore home, which is basically WebSphere application server, Java JRE bin. How to run JExtract? The syntax for running JExtract against the core file is a little different for 1.4 and 1.5 SDKs. As you can see, in 1.5, it generates a zip file, and it's not required to provide the output file name. For 1.4 SDK, the output is SDFF file. Again, all this is discussed in our regular crash must gather document for you to reference. Some of the common JExtract failures we encounter. The most common being the customers running a JExtract on a different machine from the code produced on a different with a different SDK version. So make sure JExtract is run on the same system the core was produced using the same SDK version. JExtract may cause errors or incomplete output if the core is corrupted or truncated. It's supported only for IBM SDKs, so you can't use it for Sun or HP. And keep in mind that this should be run against a core and not Java core. Moving on to slide 21, dump analyzer, where and how to get it. Now that we have talked about how to run JExtract, let's talk about running dump analyzer tool itself. The dump analyzer is being made available as part of a IBM Support Assistant. It's a plugin you can install inside ISA. I'm not sure if everyone in this call is familiar with IBM Support Assistant, so let me just give you a very brief overview. ISA is a free tool that you download from IBM, and that serves as a one-stop shop to organize all the resources that you need for problem determination. It lets you do things like search for information, collect diagnostic data, open and manage PMRs, etc. It also lets you access a number of problem determination tools like PMAT, Java Core Analyzer, etc. Jump Analyzer is one of the tools available in ISA, and in the next charts, let me show you how to install it in ISA and launch it. Moving on to slide 22, Jump Analyzer functions. There are many functions in Dump Analyzer, and you might use different ones depending on the type of problem that you have, such as a crash, hang, or out of memory. For a crash, you might use directly the default dump report function that we'll describe in more detail in a few minutes. But just for your general information, the way you might use Dump Analyzer in general is this. First, you might run a simple default general purpose script that attempts to diagnose problems automatically. If the default does not detect the problem or does not provide enough information, you would then turn to one of the many specialized analyzers, such as default dump report. There are also many other analyzers for specific problems and specific areas of WebSphere. We should note also that the list of analyzers is extensible. We make it possible for everyone, including customers, to write their own analyzers, and we're constantly adding new analyzers ourselves for new problems. We encourage people, both inside and outside IBM, to experiment and release new analyzers. Moving on to slide 23, IBM Support Assistant. Here is the first screen that you would normally see after installing IBM Support Assistant. It leads to three main activities: find information, analyze problem, manage service request. In the find information section, it helps you search and find general information about many types of problems and many products. In the analyze problem section, it lets you collect diagnostic data and launch problem determination tools such as Dump Analyzer. In manage service request section, it lets you manage your PMRs and communicate with IBM support through PMRs. Moving on to slide 24, installing Dump Analyzer in ISA. In practice, you would normally proceed as follows. Install ISA itself by downloading it from the above URL. Once you have ISA installed, you'll be able to install plugins for many tools and many products all inside your ISA. To install the Dump Analyzer tool, find the menu in ISA labeled Update. Find New, then Tools Add-ons, as shown in the screenshot above. You will be presented with a list of tools that can be installed. Select the two tools labeled IBM Monitoring and Diagnostic Tools for Java, which is Dump Analyzer, and WebSphere Application Server Modules for the IBM Monitoring and Diagnostic Tools for Java, Dump Analyzer. Moving on to slide 25. Launching Dump Analyzer in ISA. Once you have installed Dump Analyzer inside ISA, you need to launch it. To launch a tool in ISA, you go to the Analyze Problems activity and select the Tools panel, as shown in the area circled in red in the screenshot above. In that panel, you will be presented with a list of all the tools that are currently installed in your ISA. Dump Analyzer will be one of them. Select that one and click Launch. Moving on to slide 26. Running a predefined analyzer in ISA. Once Dump Analyzer is launched, you will see the screen shown in the screenshot above. On the screen, you have, near the top, a field in which you enter the name of the dump file, or actually the output of the JExtract that you want to analyze. In the middle section, a catalog of all the analysis modules that are available inside Dump Analyzer. As we discussed earlier, there are many analysis modules you can browse through by opening all the sections in this menu. For our purposes here, we just suggest that you open up the section labeled Start Year and select the analyzer called Default Dump Report underscore Standard. Once you have selected a dump file to analyze, just click the Analyze button at the bottom of the screen. This will launch the analysis. The analysis may take a few minutes depending on the size of the dump. Once the analysis completes, you will see a screenshot like the one in the next tab. Move on to slide 27. Running a predefined analyzer such as default dump report. Here is a typical output from running the default dump report standard analyzer on a small dump file we used for this demo. This output is simply a formatted text report containing many sections with various information extracted from the dump. For example, here you see the time of the dump, the system type, the number of processors, etc. There's a lot more information in this report that can be seen by scrolling in this window. Let's talk about the most important sections in the next chart. Moving on to slide 28. What's in the default dump report output? I'll just highlight some of the main sections in the default dump report output here, and then we'll look at a real example in the next slide. Basic information provides details about the machine and process information. We'll look at that in a moment. JVM arguments used during startup, for example, class path, heap settings, system properties, etc. Environment variables include was, home, path, and heap dump variable information. Threads provide both Java and native stack details. Memory region provides information about the heap layout, which is more useful for out-of-memory problems. Please note, there is some information that you don't normally get from a Java course, such as the native stacks and native memory areas. The WAS thread IDs, which match the thread IDs that you see in the WAS trace, can be obtained from a default dump report or dump analyzer tool, which normally is not listed in a Java core. Moving on to slide 29. Here is an example of a real dump analyzer output. I've just listed some of the important headers here. Please note, each section contains a lot more data, but we have only listed relevant data that is useful to debug a crash. The image and runtime information section provides process ID and current thread, which is 10292. With the help of this current thread ID, we'll be able to obtain the stack information of the failing thread. The JVM initialization argument section provides information about heap settings, GC policy, so on and so forth. In the library section, we get information about libraries loaded, such as native libraries like JDBC driver. The native thread section contains JNI threads that are part of the process, but not part of the JVM. The monitors and log section contain information about monitors and logs, which is more useful to troubleshoot hangs in performance. The heap section provides memory information for the process and is useful for debugging memory issues. Moving on to slide 30, dump analyzer output headers, continued. This section of the dump analyzer is very useful for debugging crash problems. Basically, it lists all the Java threads, including native stacks. you take a look at the system thread ID in the example above, which is 10292, which matches with the current thread ID listed in the previous slide in the image and runtime information section, indicating that this is the current thread. The native stack area displays the range of stack memory available for the thread. In this case, it's 8 KB. If you were to look closely at the above stack, you can safely assume that the GVM crashed during the JIT compilation process. If the default dump report does not readily list this as the current thread, you can often get a good indication of which one it is by looking at all the threads and checking which ones show a state of runnable or running. Moving on to slide 31. Conclusion. Just a recap of what we discussed so far. In part one, we discussed the crash symptoms, the importance of preparing the system such that it's ready to collect the right must gather data. We then reviewed sample Java codes from different crash symptoms. In part two, we discussed how to process the core and analyze the core using dump analyzer tool. Again, I would like to reiterate on this one, which is always trying to stay close to the latest levels of SDK. Using the latest levels of debug tools is also important as enhancements are being done frequently. If you do the initial problem determination, think the problem lies within Java or vendor code, contact IBM support or vendor immediately. This could save you time. Moving on to slide 32, references. Here is a list of good references that comes in handy while debugging JDK issues in general. If you take a look at the JDK diagnostics guide, under the diagnostic tools section, you will find details on the syntax that I referred to in some of the slides. The IBM supported system site link provides more details about the ISA tool itself and how to install it. The Vestia must gather page can introduces you to the ISA-like tool for data collection. It's available for most of the components, but crash data collection part is not ready yet. Should be available soon. There's also a separate presentation on dump analyzer tool for those who are interested in learning more about it. Moving on to slide 33, there are some additional Vestia product resources. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for Vestia products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcast and conference information. Visit Vestia.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products interest to you. That concludes the presentation for today, and at this time, I'd like to hand it over to Joseph.
Thank you, Jerry, for a great presentation. At this point, Sarah, we would like to open the line for questions.
Our first question will come from Jim Morinsell with IG.
Can you explain what SnapTrace is? I see that's a new dump that comes up in Java 1.5, and how do you extract the data out of that?
So currently, the information that is in the SnapTrace is not, you know, for review by customers. So we are using that internally for headers that are actually logged into that file. So as far as customers are concerned, that file is just for IBM.
Okay.
We'll hear from Chuck Cheng with CarQuest.
Hi, Mark. I say to actually run on memory itself, I tried to analyze a heap dump generated from WAS, but I couldn't. Could you share the specification of the environment which you run IC2 in the lab?
The way you normally run, run dump, so you run dump, it's really dump analyzer that's running out of memory when you're running it inside of ISA there, right? And so, basically you're limited by the fact that you're running on your workstation. There are two things you can do. When you start dump analyzer, on the first panel, the one that asks you for the name of the file and the name of the, and to select the analyzer that you want to run, there is another field at the bottom that says additional parameters or additional arguments. In that field, you can specify a larger amount of memory for dump analyzer to use. You can say, I think the syntax is -vm args:\xmx, some setting for the JVM to give it a larger heap size. So in many cases, that will be enough if you have enough physical memory on the machine, on your workstation where you have installed ISA. Now, we also realize that sometimes you don't want to run these big tools like dump analyzer or MDD4J on your desktop machine. And so we also make it possible for you to use ISA to download a tool and find the updates, make it easy to find the tool, but then get the executable from your workstation and put it on a bigger server machine. If you look at the help file for dump analyzer, there's actually a section that tells you how to get the installation and move it to a big server machine if you want to run it there more often.
Yeah, I actually bump up the heap size for ISA to 1.5 gigabyte, but that doesn't seem to be sufficient. So I'm wondering, what do you run? How do you run in the lab?
The way we run it, so that is one thing we're looking to make available to customers, by the way. In the lab, we have ways of running it remotely, of running on a server machine and then, and access the results remotely. We've not been able to make that available to customers as a prepackaged product today. So, today what we give you is the instructions for, how to install it on a server machine yourself, and we're looking in a future release to, make that something that's prepackaged where you could run it on a remote big server.
Okay.
So also just to follow on, I just wanted to make sure I understood the question. I think were you asking specifically to run the heap analyzer within the ISA that you're running out of memory, or were you running out of memory starting up the ISA?
Well, the tool I use is MDD4J, which analyzes heap dump. And that runs as a memory. So since I have a huge core dump in my machine, so I'm wondering if I analyze it with dump analyzer, I might run a memory on my ISA. So that was my question. I want to know, how do you set that up in the lab?
Okay. There's also another tool that you can try to see if that works better for you in your environment, which is the heap analyzer. It's available on the AlphaWorks website.
Oh, I'm aware of the tool. Thanks.
Okay.
Our next question will come from Bhavan Parekh with Covia.
Yeah, my question was actually regarding to SnapTraces also, and I think you have addressed that it's not available for customers per se. IBM's documentation specifically talks about some kind of formatter, trace formatter, and determine, I guess, analyze it in detail. Unfortunately, I have no idea how to actually even retrieve this trace analyzer or trace formatter per se. Basically, looking for what kind of information exactly what actually contains in these snap traces would be actually helpful to actually communicate even with IBM on any out of memory occurrences we may have.
Actually, the snap traces is basically a dump of what all functions the JVM was executing at the time of crash or at the time when they were taken. So it will tell that at what time the JVM entered into a function and if it has exited or if it has gone into some other function. So the snap traces are in the binary format, and the formatter changes them from binary format to the text format. So this formatter is is shipped along with the SDK. It's basically just a simple Java class, and using the JVM, you can invoke that class and use that formatter. The instructions to do that is there in the JVM diagnostic guide, which is publicly available.
Yeah, it's actually, you can go into ISA, and within the ISA, there's a find information, and from there, you can go to the diagnostic guide as well. And it's also in our reference section of the presentation, today's presentation. Slide number 32.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'll try to get to that. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Balandan Panin with AT&T.
I had a quick question for you. I had noticed at times the Java code doesn't come out, and it just says out of memory in application logs, and also it tells in FFDC logs as out of memory. And after noting the error code, it comes out to be a leak in the native heap. But how do I know that what is the, number one, at the time of execution, looking into the dump, if I take a kill minus three dump, how do I know that what is the capacity of the native heap that was being used by the process or by the application at the time?
I think we covered this, we touched on this topic during the presentation. Basically, if you ran out of native memory, typically you would see errors in the native underscore standard error dot log saying malloc failed or unable to allocate print buffer. In that event, the contents of the Java code are recorded in the native standard error log itself. That's a clear indication that you are exhausting the native resources.
But I want to know how much it was utilizing capacity.
The sure way to look at is looking at the process size. And there is another great article on the DeveloperWorks site written by Andrew Hall.
Okay. The idea is that by looking at the Java core dumps, we will not be able to determine how much was the capacity of the native memory being used. Is that a true statement?
That's correct. But here is the rule of thumb we use generally to estimate what's the native memory. For example, you've got a Java core, and you know what the heap settings you're running with and how much the Java heap has expanded at that point. And then you get the process size from the output, say, top or PS. And typically, the process size should be size of the Java heap plus 400 meg on top of it, depending on what native code you're running on. Right? For example, if you're using Type 2 drivers, no JNI code, and if you're running with a heap of 1 gig, and the process size is 1.5, that's reasonable. But if it's going over 2 gig, you can safely say that we are running out of native resources.
Because I had kept it 1.5, and my GC was at 845, and still I got out-of-memory error. And after analyzing, it came out to be a native memory heap error, but I wanted to know what was the capacity that was being utilized. Was it what are the chunks of 256 segments, how many chunks it was using?
So I am guessing that you're talking about AIX here, right?
Right.
Exactly, because we in AIX, the memory model is divided into 14 or 16 different segments, and certain parts of that is allocated purely for native memory and the rest for Java. And a very important piece of information is SVMON. SVMON exactly tells you which of the segments are filled and what's the native library that's getting loaded from that segment. So if you're talking in specific for AIX, SVMON is the tool to look for.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question will come from Ashra Mishra with IBM.
Yeah, hi. I saw in the beginning of the presentation where you had recommended U-limit to be unlimited. I know in InfoCenter we have like a recommendation for U-limit setting for different platforms. So usually we wouldn't be running with unlimited. Can you, contrast these two to see is there any pro and con of running with unlimited or, when you have a crash?
No, not really. I mean, you can run with the unlimited U-limit.
And just to let you know, U-limit has several different flags for number of file descriptors, file size, process size. So we're talking about only the core file setting here. Basically, we're saying set it to unlimited, so irrespective of how big the process, we will be ensured to get a full core. So we don't take a chance in a production environment, say, if we just set it too low. But I don't see any downside to it.
If I may, this is Dan. I mean, I guess I would say, you know, I guess it's a choice you have to make, right? The downside is that it's going to write a big file on your disk. So if you set unlimited to a small amount of, to a small value, you're not going to use up too much of your disk, but then you risk not having a good core file. So when there's a crash, you might not be able to find out what the problem is. So if you have a big disk, definitely you should allow that. If you really are concerned about filling up your disk and are willing to take the chance not to get enough information when there's a crash, then, you know, set it to a smaller value.
Well, it's not so much, because InfoSera has the recommended values based for each platform. Then we should, like, say, you know, set it to unlimited rather than having some values.
I think so. Well, I think most people today have big disks, so that's not a big concern. They can afford to write even a 1 gigabyte core if that's what it takes.
Right, I think the confusion might be the ULimit setting for the core file, which we are requesting or recommending to be set as unlimited.
Okay, thank you.
We have Mr. Jag Sahir with Nation Mutual.
Yes. Yes, if we have WebSphere running on Solaris and we get a heat dump on that machine, can we use the same IBM's tool to analyze? Because it doesn't write in the normal PhD format or a text format. It writes in a HPROF format.
I'm guessing you're talking about heap analyzer tool here, right?
That's correct.
Yes, you can use it. Internally, we have some routine that converts it into a IBM readable format.
Okay.
Our next question will come from Ed Simpson with IBM.
On slide 7, you mentioned processing the core using JExtract. It's the first time I've heard of that. And is that required to be run before you can use the ISA tools?
All right. So basically, the output of JExtract is the file that you'd be using as an input to your dump analyzer.
Okay. And on remote systems, is the ISA tool, can it be configured to go out and retrieve these files and pull them out into your system?
So basically, ISA can be run on any system, basically on Windows, and the JExtract is the part that you need to do on the machine where the core was produced. So basically, it produces a machine-independent file. The output is a machine-independent file that you can use it on the ISA.
If I may comment on that, because I think you were talking about remote collections, normally you would run the ISA workbench itself, the ISA UI, on your laptop, on your desktop. But if you go into the Analyze Problem tab and then there's a Collect Data tab, that allows you to do remote collections. And so you can run from your laptop, you can run something that will remotely collect the core file and run JExtract for you. There are actually two ways to do that. One is with an agent. You have to install an agent on your remote system, and your workbench is going to call the agent and tell him what to do. The other one is a new thing we've introduced called ISA Lite, which lets you generate a little script that you can transfer over to your remote system, and that will do all the complicated collection work for you.
I think I did see that. I created actually one of those remote
portable collectors, probably.
Yeah, portable collectors, and it was it created it, and so all our systems are AIX.
Right.
And so then I didn't see any information on how to go out and install it on the AIX system to retrieve it.
So you have a choice. For the portable collector, you know, it's manual. I mean, it is what is now being renamed ISA Lite, by the way. For the portable collector, the expectation is that you're going to telnet to the machine yourself, you know, bring the portable collector and run it there by hand. That's what makes it light.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't want to do it by hand, you can look in, I think there's a lot of tutorial and documentation in ISA, but you can install what's called the ISA agent, and then you would not use a portable collector. You would sit on your workbench and say connect to the agent on machine, whatever, and, you know, do it. But that requires you to, you know, pre-install the agent then. So you have a choice, basically.
And where do you get those agents?
You went from the same place you got the ISA workbench. There should be an ISA agent download.
Okay. For all systems AIX?
Pretty much, yeah, many systems. Certainly AIX, yes.
Okay.
Many others, yes.
That sounds like it would make it much easier. All right, thank you very much.
And we have no further questions.
Thank you, Sarah. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.